The fat deputy with the black hat was Strother. The one with the undershot jaw was Pickens. They looked at me with care and mistrust, which I thought a good combination coming from the likes of them. I could work with care and mistrust. If I asked you fellows about a man with a blue ring tattooed on his ankle, would it mean anything to you? They exchanged a glance, and then Black Hat, Strother, said, "The stockade." "What stockade would that be?" Already, I didn't like the sound of it. "Beely stockade," Pickens said, looking at me as though I were the utterest of utter idiots. "Does thee not know of it, and thee a gunslinger?" "Beely town's west of here, isn't it?" I asked. "Was," Strother said. "It's Beely ghost town now. Harriers tore through it 5 year ago. Some say John Farson's men, but I don't believe that, never in life. 'Twas plain old garden variety outlaws. Once there was a militia outpost, back in the days when there was a militia, and Beely stockade was their place of business. It was where the circuit judge sent thieves and murderers and card cheats." "Witches and warlocks, too," Pickens volunteered. He wore the face of a man remembering the good old days, when the railroad trains ran on time and the jing-jang no doubt rang more often, with calls from more places. "Practicers of the dark arts." "Once they took a cannibal," Strother said. "He ate his wife." This caused him to give out with a foolish giggle, although whether it was the eating or the relationship that struck him as funny, I couldn't say. "He was hung, that fellow," Pickens said. He bit off a chunk of chew and worked it with his peculiar jaw. He still looked like a man remembering a better, rosier past. "There was lots of hangings at Beely Stockade in those days. I went several times with my da and my mamar to see him. Mamar always packed a lunch." He nodded slowly and thoughtfully. "Aye, many and many a. Lots of folks came. There was booths and clever people doing clever things such as juggling. Sometimes there was dogfights in a pit, but of course it was the hangings that were the real show." He chuckled. "I remember this one fella who kicked a regular Kamala when the drop didn't break his..."
"What's this to do with blue ankle tattoos?"
"Oh," Strother said, recalled to the initial subject. "Anyone who ever did time in Beely had one of those put on, you see. Although I disremember if it was for punishment or just identification in case they ran off from one of the work gangs. All that stopped 10 years ago when the stockade closed. That's why the Harriers was able to have their way with the town, you know. Because the militia left and the stockade closed. Now we have to deal with all the bad element and riffraff ourselves."
He eyed me up and down in the most insolent way.
"We don't get much help from Gilead these days, no? Have to get more from John Farson. And there's some that'd send a parley party west to ask him."
Perhaps he saw something in my eyes, because he sat up a little straighter in his chair and said,
"Not me, of course. Never. I believe in the straight law and the line of eld."
"So do we all," Pickens said, nodding vigorously.
"Would you want to guess if some of the salt miners did time in Beely Stockade before it was decommissioned?" I asked. Strother appeared to consider, then said,
"Oh, probably a few. No more than 4 in every 10, I should say."
In later years, I learned to control my face, but those were early times, and he must have seen my dismay. It made him smile. I doubt if he knew how close that smile brought him to suffering. I'd had a difficult 2 days, and the boy weighed heavily on my mind.
"Who did he think would take a job digging salt blocks out of a miserable hole in the ground for penny wages?" Strother asked. "Model citizens?"
It seemed that young Bill would have to look at a few of the salties after all. We'd just have to hope the fellow we wanted didn't know the ring tattoo was the only part of him the kid had seen. When I went back to the cell, young Bill was lying on the pallets, and I thought he'd gone to sleep. But at the sound of my boot heels, he sat up. His eyes were red, his cheeks wet. Not sleeping then, but mourning. I let myself in, sat down beside him, and put an arm around his shoulders. This didn't come naturally to me.
I know what comfort and sympathy are, but I've never been much good at giving such. I knew what it was to lose a parent, though. Young Bill and young Roland had that much in common. "Did you finish your candy?" I asked. "Don't want the rest," he said, and sighed. Outside, the wind boomed hard enough to shake the building, then subsided. "I hate that sound," he said, just what Jamie DeCurry had said. It made me smile a little. "And I hate being in here. It's like I did something wrong."
"You didn't," I said.
"Maybe not, but it already seems like I've been here forever, cooped up. And if they don't get back before nightfall, I'll have to stay longer, won't I?"
"I'll keep you company," I said. "If those deputies have a deck of cards, we can play Jack's pop-up."
"For babies," he said morosely.
"Then watch me, or poker. Can thee play those?"
He shook his head, then brushed at his cheeks. The tears were flowing again. "I'll teach thee. We'll play for matchsticks."
"I'd rather hear the story you talked about when we stopped in the Sheppy's lay-by. I don't remember the name."
"The wind through the keyhole," I said.
"But it's a long one, Bill."
"We have time, don't we?"
I couldn't argue that.
"There are scary bits in it, too. Those things are all right for a boy such as I was, sitting up in his bed with his mother beside him. But after what you've been through..."
"Don't care," he said. "Stories take a person away. If they're good ones, that is. Is it a good one?"
"Yes. I always thought so, anyway."
"Then tell it."
He smiled a little. "I'll even let you have 2 of the last 3 chalkers."
"Those are yours, but I might roll a smoke."
I thought about how to begin.
"Do you know stories that start once upon a by before your grandfather's grandfather was born?"
"They all start that way, at least the ones my da told me, before he said I was too old for stories."
"A person's never too old for stories, Bill. Man and boy, girl and woman, never too old. We live for them."
"Do you say so?"
"I do."
I took out my tobacco and papers. I rolled slowly, for in those days it was a skill yet new to me. When I had a smoke just to my liking, one with the draw end tapered to a pinhole, I struck a match on the wall. Bill sat cross-legged on the straw pallets. He took one of the chalkers, rolled it between his fingers much as I'd rolled my smoke, then tucked it into his cheek. I started slowly and awkwardly, because storytelling was another thing that didn't come naturally to me in those days, although it was a thing I learned to do well in time. I had to. All gunslingers have to. And as I went along, I began to speak more naturally and easily, because I began hearing my mother's voice. It began to speak through my own mouth, every rise, dip, and pause. I could see him fall into the tale, and that pleased me. It was like hypnotizing him again, but in a better way, a more honest way. The best part, though, was hearing my mother's voice. It was like having her again, coming out from far inside me. It hurt, of course, but more often than not, the best things do, I found. You wouldn't think it could be so, but, as the old-timers used to say, the world's tilted, and there's an end to it. Once upon a by, before your grandfather's grandfather was born, on the edge of an unexplored wilderness called the Endless Forest, there lived a boy named Tim with his mother, Nell, and his father, Big Ross. For a time, the 3 of them lived happily enough, although they owned little.